coming in as Lou Hewitt-Dyke centered it.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flame.
You can't put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's do it. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It is Tuesday, November 12th. With Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, my name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Save. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Hello, Mr. Gilbertson.
Hey, buddy.
Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, Pat Steinberg, and we're on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. So, Flames take a 3-1 win over the LA Kings on Monday to stretch their point streak to 4, and how about this for a gauntlet of a back-to-back? Home to LA, road to Vancouver the very next day on this Tuesday night, into Vancouver where it all began, Wes, where it all began, and yeah, that is very dramatic. But as the Flames approach their quarter mark, I wonder how important that win to start the season on October 9th in Vancouver really was. Just over a month ago, look, you know, one thing I think both you and I picked up on covering training camp, one thing we picked up on as the preseason rolled on is, you know, the type of belief that this Flames group had, whether it was Ryan Lomberg or Michael Backlund or Jonathan Huberdeau or Nazem Kadri or whoever you talk to, Mackenzie Weegar, so on and so forth, a lot of belief in this team, kind of like, we don't care that you guys might not believe in us, that the outside might not believe in us. We believe in one another. We believe in what we're doing. But then you go into Vancouver, have an absolute nightmare first 20 minutes to start your season, fall down 4-1, and then fight your way back. You take a 5-4 third period lead, and then you win the game on Connor Zary's OT winner. To open the season with that type of win, with the belief that this group already had going into the regular season, man, I don't know if you can overstate how much that game, that win, that start set the tone for what we've seen in the 15 games since.
I'm going to take your words and maybe twist them around a little bit, and so my apologies in advance, but I'm not sure what this group had during training camp was belief. I think what they had was optimism. And so the importance of opening night for me is that I look at that as when optimism started to turn into belief. And if I remember us talking about it, it must have been the next day. Like, that was a okay, I told you so moment after 20 minutes, right? How many things on social media we see saying, oh, geez, this is going to be a long season for the Flames? And I'll admit that was my reaction after 20 minutes too. Not only were they trailing 4-1, but they sort of deserved to be trailing 4-1. Some of it had to do with penalty troubles, but you know, it wasn't bad luck. It wasn't like they hadn't been outplayed in that first period. And so, you know, you had the potential of opening night being an I told you so game. Hey, you know, everyone's been telling the Flames they're going to stink, and everyone's now telling them, look, see, we told you guys, it's going to be a long year.
You guys can believe all you want, but this is what you are type thing.
And they insisted that they were optimistic about the group they had, that they thought that they could do some good things. And I just see that next 43 minutes or whatever it turned out. I can't remember how long into overtime Connor Zary scored that great goal off that terrific play with Martin Pospisil, but that's when the actual belief started to build. Yep. And you and I have been hanging around locker rooms for long enough to know that's legit. It's not a coincidence that a team that wins a comeback game suddenly starts winning a few of them. There is a belief that starts to build, and that's what happened for me October 9th in Vancouver.
This was head coach Ryan Huska on Tuesday morning in Vancouver, asked kind of a similar question. How much did that set the tone for what they've been able to do in a lot of games since?
I'm sure it did. I mean, there's a lot of emotion and momentum switches in that game, and we found a way to win, and I think we were able to use that the right way, and it allowed the group to feel good about itself on a night when things didn't look great for us after one period. So we were able to turn that, and I think the guys did ride that momentum for a little while.
And Michael Backlund, kind of a similar sentiment on Tuesday morning.
You know, you could easily just after, what was it, 4-1 after the second, right? Or after...
Yeah, 4-1 after two.
Yeah, so it's like easy could have just checked out and just played the game. But, you know, we dug in deep and we believed, and they created us some great momentum to start the season. And that belief and no quit has been our statement since that game. So I think the season would have looked a lot different if we... just in, you know, if we just played out that game, but the boys really dig in deep and find a way to win it. So it was a big, big start to the season.
So if all of a sudden, to what you just heard from Michael, to Michael's point, if the Flames just kind of go quietly into the night and so, you know what, it's not our night. We got the home opener coming up on Friday. If that's
and you would have got it, well,
you would have. They got their doors blown off in the first period. You know, poor Dan Vladar loses his mask and the goal still counts, which. It should have. It was the right call, but you're like, geez, nothing is going Calgary's way here. You know, they lose Rooney, and, you know, they're taking awful penalties, and they're chanting JT Miller and all that type of stuff. And even after Anthony Mantha scores that really pretty breakaway goal out of the penalty box, what, like on the same power play, the Canucks score again, Brock Besser, who won't play Tuesday night, but he scores his second of the period, and you're like, holy, this is just not going to be their night.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, Rasmus Anderson gives us death stare number one in the second period. And then they come out guns a-blazing down 4-2 in the third period. Early on, it's 4-3. Then it's 5-4. Then it's 4-4. Then it's 5-4. And it took a JT Miller bomb to tie that game and send it to overtime. So I'm with you. Like, I really do wonder where things go if they don't kind of. Am I allowed to say this? If they don't sack up and I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, it's Grey Cup week. Sack's a big term.
It's a fair point. Yeah. So that's what I meant for sure. If they don't get on their horse and find a way to make that a competitive game, hell, even if they don't win the game, I think if they make that close, there's a little bit of belief that is built. But the fact that they were able to take a third period lead and still win it in overtime, even after a late game tying goal from Vancouver, there's just a lot to be gained from that type of night to start the year. I don't usually take a lot from opening night. There's been plenty of nights when, because we just got conditioned to the Flames losing on opening night.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore.
Not anymore. Was it three straight, two straight, whatever it is?
At least three.
Many times I've been like, okay, it's game one of 82. Like, this is not going to, they're not going to be, they lost to the Oilers and McDavid got a hat trick. That doesn't mean that it's going to be an awful season. But I think what you took away from opening night this year is that, okay, these guys have been talking a real positive game since the beginning of training camp, whether it was Nazem Kadri's pump the brakes, or I remember Ryan Lomberg was talking to him just kind of off to the side one day where while he was waiting for somebody else, and he was saying, like, Patty, like the sneaky talent, like people aren't giving us enough credit. Like, there's some sneaky talent in this room. I know that there's lots of projections that have us here or there, but we think we're way better and we can't wait to start showing people. Like, just things like that. They were feeling that way. That was legit. And then you get it reinforced. Then you get it validated and you come away with 2 points on the road in a hostile environment against one of your arch rivals. I don't know how that can't build a little bit of belief and momentum.
Yeah, you know what? I like that word that you chose, validated. I think, you know, you go into a game and the Calgary Flames are sort of the mindset, hey, we think we're a pretty good hockey team.
Yeah.
Well, if you lose 7-2 on opening night, suddenly you're probably thinking to yourself, that's a pretty good hockey team over there too. Geez, that really wasn't close. And so to show that resilience, certainly a word that we've used a lot on this show over the past 5 weeks to, you know, to showcase that first, I suppose, glimpse of the never quit that Michael Backlund referenced. I do think that was an important night. And yeah, you're right. If they come back and ultimately lose by one, I still think there's some momentum, but to then go into overtime and get rewarded with that second point and be able to kind of take that momentum, bring it back home for their opener. I think we're talking about multiple victories that you can eventually say that probably happened in part because of the momentum they gained on opening night.
I like this text now. Rob writes in, I do have to selectively edit this text, but it's not
a lot of Grey Cup terms in there.
Yeah. Or, you know, other terms, you know, just maybe some misspelled words. I don't know.
Okay.
Usually I wouldn't read a text with this many 4-letter bombs, but the actual theme of the text is very valid and not offensive. Usually this earns you a block with that many of this word, but the theme of it and the intent of it is not blockable. It's very, almost fully accurate. This from Rob: the Flames didn't have optimism in the preseason. They had FU. You guys are going to finish last in the division. FU. You guys aren't going to be able to score and have terrible goaltending. FU. You guys are going to trade everybody and tank. FU. Now, you know, that very easy selective editing, but I do think there's something to that. Like, I think they played with a little defiance. And then when you get that validated on night one of the regular season, it just builds that even more. It's like, hey, we just punched the Canucks in the mouth. You know, this group that finished first in the Pacific last year and went to game 7 of round 2. And this is going to be a big building block year. And yeah, they handed us our lunch in the first period. But, you know, here's a couple birds. Let's see what we do in the final 40. Like, you get validated on that type of attitude, it builds a little something too.
Yeah, I think Rob, I think Rob's onto something there.
I mean, Rob, and we may need to, like, I worry about your language.
Yeah, Rob.
Please, not around the kids, Rob.
Yeah, Rob, drop, what, about $6 in the swear jar?
Yeah, there's a,
yeah.
I'm going to need an ETH transfer here pretty quick.
But he's absolutely onto something, and we had those conversations with the players. I'm not sure any of them said F you back to us, but they knew what was being said. They understood the questions and, quite frankly, couldn't wait to start to prove people wrong. And that, I suppose, that comes part and parcel with a long and intense training camp and way too many preseason games. Like, that was a group that was itching to get started. And then to take some of that optimism, some of that FU that Rob talks about, and start to, I suppose, cash that in on belief, that makes a big difference. And I really do think, you know, Michael Backlund talking about the game and about the details of it, you don't have a ton of guys who could 5 weeks later remember exactly what happens in a game. They just play too many games. I shouldn't say too many, but the games blur together, right?
Right.
You talk to players and they'll give you the, yeah, I think in this one it was something like this, or, you know, the fact that the details of that game are burned in their memory banks tells you something as well.
Yeah.
I do believe, I don't think we're overstating it to say that was a real momentum building night for this Flames team.
Text line is open, 960-960 on this hour of Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg on a Tuesday, and all of this talk comes after a 3-1 win over Los Angeles on Monday night at the Scotiabank Saddledome, game 4 of a 5-game road trip, if you want to put it that way. Flames are on the road for 3, back for 1, then the second half of back-to-back for 5 games straight with travel between them. They're back on Friday to take on Nashville, which actually starts a true homestand where there's not any travel. What did we like in Monday's win over LA? Or I guess in a lot of ways, it's probably fair to say what we didn't like in that game, because there wasn't a lot to dislike.
Yeah,
it was a really solid night for the Flames, where I think from start to finish, even when the Kings maybe started to wrestle back a little bit of control in that hockey game territorially, I didn't come away from a 3-1 win on Monday saying, well, I didn't like that. Or hell, even the power play looked pretty decent. A huge kill late. There wasn't much to dislike on Monday night. That's the type of game it was for the Flames.
There just weren't any passengers for the Flames last night. There was nobody that you could go through post game and say, you know, I didn't love his game, or I didn't think he offered a whole lot, or yeah, I understand why he had the bench shortened on him. And I think it's important that this team, because, you know, we've said it over and over again, they don't have the one game breaker who's going to just say, hey, boys, on my shoulders, I got this tonight. And so I think this is a team that is going to have to come at you in waves. This is going to have to be a team that is relentless in its forecheck, relentless in its effort, relentless in generating chances, because quite frankly, they're going to need a few more chances than some teams are going to need to score goals. Like they don't have any of those sure thing finishers, or, you know, they don't have a 50 goal guy sitting on their bench. And so that's what I liked most, is that I thought it was their most complete effort of the season, in the sense that there really wasn't anyone that's game I disliked last night. And so that's the first thing that comes to, comes to mind for me. And I guess the other one being, there was just a real commitment to the way they need to play. You know, that didn't feel like an uneven hockey game to me, which made it even more important that the Flames were bought into the way that they need to play to have success, because their margin, I still think, was pretty thin, and yet they never strayed away from how they have to play. They stuck to that recipe.
I do give Dustin Wolf a lot of credit, because, you know, he was very very sparsely involved for the first 30 minutes or so, but made a big breakaway stop on Trevor Moore, made a couple of other... Fiala who had the breakaway?
Fiala and Kopitar had sort of the prime...
Fiala had the first period breakaway, not Moore. Had the breakaway stop on Fiala. It was high dangers and 10 bell chances, very few and far between, because Kings barely had the puck in the first 30 minutes. They were bad. The Flames were really good. And I think made him look worse. But Dustin Wolf played a really solid game. Francis tweeted out on Monday night a really good angle that the NHL finally put out about the goal that ruined Dustin Wolf's shutout. One of the greatest saves that counted as a goal that we'll ever see. I do actually, when looking at that angle, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's pretty conclusive. I'd go to Francis's Twitter. He put that out there. At first, you know, and I certainly said this on Monday's post game, that I didn't think it was conclusive from the angles that I'd seen, you know, watching the Amazon telecast or the in-house looks. Like, nothing I had seen from there looked super conclusive. And that's why I was like, well, if it's not definitive, if it's not clearly conclusive, then you shouldn't call it a goal if it was called no goal on the ice. But the one that Francis tweeted out was the most clear one to me, that was like, okay, yeah, I guess I can see it. And in the end, it didn't end up affecting the result. The Flames ended up winning. A great job killing off that penalty. But I sure did feel bad for Dustin, because that's the second time in recent memory where he's been that close to his first shutout. Remember, Marty Pospisil, what are you doing in game 82, taking that penalty? San Jose scores on the power play
last
to ruin the
minute,
shutout.
I want
to
say.
Last two, last one, whatever it was. It was heartbreaking. And this one maybe even more so, because he made such a ridiculous stop. Anyway, I know Wolf doesn't care. I know that him losing a shutout in a win is immaterial, and he did not lose a single wink of sleep. But on the outside, you're like, that would have been nice to see him get that shutout, because he was fully deserving of it.
Haven't we seen, buddy, that this is a guy who's going to get some shutouts in the NHL? Like, his...
I know, he's too small, Wes.
His
I don't know what
growing
you're talking about.
Comfort level. He, you know, I said this to somebody at the rink yesterday. He is ahead of where I thought he would be at this point in terms of settling in his first full season in the NHL. I did not expect, and you know, the shine could certainly come off. We're still talking about a guy who's classified as a rookie. He's going to have some tough starts, but I did not expect him, and I've been a big proponent of Dustin Wolf, as you know, I did not expect him to look as comfortable as he is, in the first five weeks of this season, as quickly as he has. I've been really impressed. He had one junky start in Utah, but beyond that, there has just been a ton to like from this 23-year-old goaltender.
Without question. And I just continue to be really, really impressed with what we've seen from him. And he is still one of the top goaltenders in the league. in 5-on-5 save percentage. If I do my quick count, 1, 2, 3, 4, he's fifth overall in 5-on-5 save percentage amongst goalies with 100 or more minutes at a 950 coming out of Monday's win. Like, he just continues to do outstanding stuff. I'm just pulling out his goals saved above expected just for you.
But hey, hang on, before you close that 5-on-5 save percentage, who are the four above him?
With a minimum 100 minutes played,
yeah.
Jonathan Quick's got a 989 5-on-5 save percentage. Cam Talbot in Detroit, 966. Stolarz in Toronto, 961. Freddie Anderson in Carolina, 953.
Okay.
And Dustin Wolf is at 950. Now,
where's Hellebuck? I thought he'd be top five on that list for sure.
He's just a little further down at 936.
Okay.
And look, 955 on five is a little, that's really, really good and maybe not super sustainable. But Wolf also seventh overall in terms of 5-on-5 goals saved above expected at 5.7 goals above expected, right behind Philip Gustafson in Minnesota. Lucas Dostal, who his numbers don't get the type of love they should because he's playing on such a horrible team. Dostal's got 11.4 goals saved above expected at 5-on-5. He's been out of his mind. But Dustin Wolf, seventh in terms of 5-on-5 goals saved above expected, fifth with 5-on-5 save percentage at 950.
You know who will not be surprised about Lucas Dostal's numbers is Dustin Wolf, because those two had some epic showdowns at the AHL level. There's a ton of mutual respect there, I'll tell you that much.
Again, I'm with you 100%. I have been adamant going back to last season to all the Dustin Wolf, he's not going to be able to play in the NHL, too small for the NHL. Like, he won six or seven starts in a row. He has an above 900 career NHL save percentage. Tell me a goalie that has 900 numbers in the NHL that doesn't belong in the NHL. Oh, wait, because there are none. The question about whether or not Dustin Wolf can be a full-time number one in the NHL, we don't know, because as Kevin Woodley always says, until you've done it, you just haven't done it. And so that still needs to be determined. We're still very early in his first NHL season. But this guy is in the league he belongs in.
Yeah.
I don't think he will. When I tweeted out on Monday, because Dustin Wolf also picked up his first NHL point on the eventual game winner, your question was quite funny. You're like, when you lost the shutout, did you at least like the fact that you got the assist on the game winner?
It's good. You got to.
I thought that was a very important and
I'm a silver linings guy.
You always are. But I just, I look at that and say to myself, like, yeah, I didn't think it would be this good this early on. And he's been really good. Like, good on him.
The thing that impresses me the most, and saw it again last night, maybe saw it even a more shining example than we've seen in a lot of games, is just the poise. Like, I think, and we haven't really touched on this because it turned out to be inconsequential or didn't matter, but you give up the goal, suddenly you're only leading by one and you're going to the penalty kill. And if the Kings happen to tie it on that power play, like, we're talking about a game that has gone from arguably your best of the season, and I mean that from a group standpoint, to a massive gut punch, right? If LA had scored on that power play and suddenly we're talking about a 2-2 game, that's, we're having a totally different discussion today. And just that sort of calming presence that Dustin Wolf is already bringing this team. Like, the fact that you kind of looked at him as that penalty kill from a Flames perspective started and thought, yeah, it looks like he's got this. I wouldn't be too worried about him. And I just think that's one of the most impressive parts, because
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport, with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg, now the voice of the Calgary Flames. Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Flames are in Vancouver Tuesday night, coming off a 3-1 win over Los Angeles on Monday night. Little back-to-back divisional showdowns for the Flames. Wilsey, last night you called it a blueprint game. On your final thoughts on the way out of our Flames Talk postgame show as you were wrapping up, and I think that's a really good way of phrasing what we saw Monday against LA, just a solid start to finish effort from the Flames. But you know what made Monday's win over the Kings a quote-unquote blueprint game in your eyes?
For me, it started with the start, Pat. I mean, that has been something that we have probably sounded a lot like a broken record asking the coaches and the players about this season. And they kept saying, yeah, we got to get off to better starts. And they just kept getting off to slow starts until Monday's game against the Kings. And they got off to a great start. And I think what impressed me as much as anything else with last night's 3-1 win was, you know, despite a really strong start to the game, and they didn't give up a shot on goal for the first 10 or 11 minutes last night, they didn't score until halfway through the hockey game. They just stuck with it, and they kept playing the right way, and they eventually got rewarded for that with two goals in 36 seconds. And to see a couple of veteran players get the party started for the Flames last night, Michael Backlund scores for a second straight game. Jonathan Huberdeau scores his team-leading sixth goal of the season. That gives them a 2-0 lead. We knew that the Kings were going to push after falling behind 2-0. I thought they started to generate more offensively after they gave up that second goal, so in the back half of the second period, and then that carried over to the third. But between Dustin Wolf and a strong penalty kill at the end of that hockey game, the Flames were able to weather the storm and play probably as close to a full 60 minutes as they have in almost any game this season. For me, it was one of their three best games. The road game versus the Oilers, the home game versus the Devils would be the other two. But I just thought that everybody chipped in their own way last night. It was a pretty complete performance from start to finish. And the fact that they got off to a start and didn't have to climb out of a hole certainly helped their cause in that game against the Kings.
That sort of completeness, Wilsey, that you talk about, that's what made it the blueprint game for me. That was, you know, we've talked about this Flames team needing to play a relentless style, needing to be one of those teams that, as you say, comes at you in waves. Like, it's just, okay, here they are, here they are, here they are. And I thought we saw that in its most prime example of the season last night. Like, I just thought that was a group that established momentum, kept the puck, especially at the start there in the opponent's zone, and then they change, and here come fresh legs, and here they come in waves again. And you know, that's certainly part of that great start that you talk about. The completeness of it being that there were really no passengers last night. And so when you talk about the blueprint, you know, the start, the fact that everybody was involved, the fact that, you know, even when they did surrender scoring chances, I didn't think they gave up a ton of really, really good ones. You know, there were a couple breaks, obviously you never want to give those up, but you know, I thought they did a good job of sort of limiting the chances. We saw a ton of shot blocks, and then we saw a lot of pace. And I thought when they started to, you know, lose games, or when they got through that fast start and kind of cooled off, they didn't play as fast as a group. And I thought, you know, there were lots of individuals. We heard Ryan Huska last night say that might be the fastest I've ever seen Connor Zary look in the NHL. I think you could say something fairly similar about Kuzmenko. I thought Martin Pospisil used his speed better last night than he has in a lot of games this year. And, you know, that resulted in just a more collective tempo than we've probably seen in the past couple of weeks. And I thought that was really encouraging as well.
Yeah. The things that jump out the most to me are the two areas that I would point to. Wes, you said one of them, no passengers, was the biggest thing for me. And, you know, even in this stretch, you know, on that road trip where they got points in all three games, I think you could have said there were passengers in all three games. And, you know, it wasn't one of those nights where, you know, you felt like every single guy or every single line was pulling their weight. Well, you felt that way against the Kings because they were. The Pospisil line was much, much better. And the other lines all pulled their weight, and you got what you needed from your pairings. And obviously Dustin Wolf was outstanding. So no passengers would be number one. And then what I do think, and we've talked a lot about Calgary's 5-on-5 game, I still would like to see the Flames control more of the 5-on-5 play. Like, I do still find through 16 games at 5-on-5, they spend more time defending than I'd like, but they do it the right way. And maybe that's just, you know, when you take a look at rosters versus rosters, sometimes that's just going to be the case where you have to defend a little bit more because maybe there just is more talent on the other side on any given night. But what I like about what the Flames have done is even on nights where they do find themselves maybe a little bit more on the back foot, it doesn't turn into a scenario where they're getting their doors blown off or where they're running around in their own zone or where they're getting blitzed. And I still don't know, as good as Dustin Wolf was against the Kings, guys, I still don't know if there's been a game this year where a goalie has stolen a win for the Flames. And that's not taking anything away from Dan Vladar or Dustin Wolf. That's more of a comment on how well the Flames have done in terms of keeping teams to the outside. Even a Kings team that turned it up after the two goals in 36 seconds midway through the second, the Kings only got 6 slot opportunities after that, and they really started to push. And that's at 5-on-5, when you've got a team that was first in the Pacific that starts to crank it up a little bit and got out of their malaise, well, to be able to limit to 5 or 6 5-on-5 slot chances, That's pretty good work. And to keep it to 8 all night against that Kings group, and that's kind of been where they've been all year when they've been at their best, is that they don't give up a lot. And Ryan Huska has talked a lot about that, Wilsey. They don't give up a lot. And when they're at their best, that has been the case. And so those would be the two things for me. No passengers. Everybody was doing what they needed against the Kings. And once again, at 5-on-5 especially, special teams are a different story, but at 5-on-5 especially, did not give up a whole lot for most of that hockey game on Monday.
Yeah, and the fact that they're 3 games above 500 and 2 points out of first place in the Pacific Division, with how much their special teams have struggled, mm-hmm. I think it says a lot about their 5-on-5 game. So they played a really good game against the Kings. I'm glad you brought up Martin Pospisil. I think it's the best game he's played, probably going back to the first few games of the season where I quite liked him playing at center. Certainly did in the season opener versus the Canucks, who we'll see tonight. And I actually think the Flames were unlucky not to have a lead following the first period against the Kings. Loved their first period. I thought they probably should have taken a lead, if not before the end of 20 minutes, then certainly before they scored those 2 goals in 36 seconds halfway through the second period. And that game was probably closer than it should have been going to the third period. And I'm still not convinced that 2-1 goal should have counted. So a really strong performance from top to bottom. And I don't know if you guys see it the same way, but to me, there are at least a couple of Flames players who are probably about to break through offensively. And I talked to one of them today, Andre Kuzmenko. He's creating a lot. He just is having a tough time putting the puck in his opponent's net. And we know he can do it. Did it in his first 2 NHL seasons. Maybe he'll do it against his former team, the Canucks, tonight. And then at the top of that list for me, and I know we're going to talk about him next, Connor Zary. He is so snake-bitten right now, but he is creating so much for the Flames offensively. So last night's final score was 3-1. I thought it was probably a more lopsided game than that, and that's a feather in the Flames' cap. You played very well against a team that's been one of the best in the NHL so far this season.
Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, and Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. You mentioned Connor Zary, and yes, snake bitten. The puck has not been going in for him, but not for a lack of opportunity, not for a lack of chances. His final stat line on Monday against the LA Kings, despite having no goals and no points when it's all said and done, Connor Zary led the team with 7 shot attempts. 5 of those got on net. And here's the crazy part. Over at Natural Stat Trick, all 7 of his shot attempts were classified as scoring chances, medium or high danger, and 5 of the 7 were classified of high dangers. Only one other individual Flames player had more than one high danger chance on Monday, and that was Nazem Kadri. Connor Zary had 5 of them. So, guys, here's my question about Zary. Even though the points haven't necessarily been coming, Is he Calgary's most dynamic offensive player for you, most exciting offensive player for you? Like, is that a fair thing to potentially put on the shoulders of Connor Zary?
For me, it's between him and Andrei Kuzmenko, but they're different players. I think Kuzmenko's probably better in zone, and Zeri's better off the rush. And I would encourage Flames fans to do what I did earlier today. Go back and watch the goal that he scored in overtime against the Canucks in the season opener at Rogers Arena back on October 9th. I think that kind of answers your question, Pat. I mean, one of the goals of the season so far in the NHL, just an absolute beauty in that 6-5 OT win. And I know he's goalless and pointless in three, and I know that he's struggling to produce offensively. I mean, he had 2 goals and 5 points in the first 4 games. He has 1 goal and 3 points in the last 11 games. And there were a couple of games in there where he didn't look like himself, but you know what? That's to be expected from any player, let alone a guy in his second season in the league. So I can cut him some slack for that. But for the most part, I do think he's been their most dynamic offensive player this season. I just don't think he's been rewarded for all of his hard work, at least not yet. But like I said earlier, I think there are at least a couple of Flames players who are about to break through offensively. And with the way he's been playing, certainly with the way he played against the Kings on Monday night, Connor Zeri is at the top of that list for me.
You know, I still think my vote for the Flames' most exciting player probably goes to Nazem Kadri offensively. And yet, I would say Connor Zeri is right there knocking at the door. And I think what's made him so fun to watch and why I don't maybe get too wound up about the lack of goals and points of late, because it does seem like he has been rewarded less than he should. But I think, to get back to what I was saying, what makes him so exciting is that he's sort of got some Nazem Kadri in him now. You know, the way he wants to attack defenders one-on-one, you know, the way he turnstiled Gavrikov last night, and then the sort of excitement that brings the building, and also the way it puts the opposing defenseman back on their heels the next time he has the puck on his stick. I'm not sure I saw that coming from Connor Zeri at this level. And, you know, we've sort of seen him make a habit of it this season. It's not that he wasn't comfortable taking guys on in those one-on-one scenarios last year, but he'd maybe dish more often than not. And I think what we're seeing now is he's so confident with the puck on his stick. He's so confident in the increased speed that he's been able to accumulate in his skating over the past couple of years that, you know, he's looking those opposing blue liners in the eyes and he wants to beat them one-on-one. And to me, that's a little bit of what has made Nazem Kadri so successful offensively through his career.
Yeah, I would say when Zeri is on it and having an on night, which especially recently he's had a lot of, I would say that he is. And the reason why I would give him the slight edge over both Kadri and Kuzmenko is because, or even Huberdeau, is because I also think he is their best entry guy. And the Flames have not had a natural entry guy since Johnny left, rest in peace. And Johnny was so seamless of gaining the zone. Like, it was like his success rate was tops in the NHL, some of the best in the NHL. Like, he did it differently than McDavid or McKinnon do it, but just his ability to slow things down, draw defenders to him, be elusive, get those defenders away from him, and the next thing you know, in the snap of a finger, he's gained offensive zone time for the Flames. Well, right now, Zeri is Calgary's best guy doing that. I think he does it better than Kadri. I think he does it better than Sharon Govich, and that's not really Kuzmenko's role. But the fact that Zeri is able to, at a high rate, gain the zone, it's part of why I still keep going back to him playing center down the road at some point, because he's so strong in that regard. But that's not the conversation that I want to get into, whether he's playing the wing or down the middle. I just think the fact that you can rely on him to frequently, consistently gain the offensive zone and do so in a dangerous fashion, that's what maybe sets him apart or puts him at the top of my list for why, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of guys who beat opposing players one-on-one like Zeri does on this team. And you couple that with his ability to elusively gain the zone a lot of the times. I think when he's on, he's got the highest end ability for that kind of dynamic skill.
Yeah, and as Wes said earlier, I'm not sure I could have predicted this from Connor Zeri. And remember, and I know people at least some people like to poo-poo on Brad Treleaven and the moves that he made when he was this team's general manager. But remember, he traded back not once, but twice, and still got the guy who he claimed he wanted in the first place, in Connor Zeri, who has developed into a better player at the NHL level than I thought he was going to be. I kind of looked at him as a guy who, you know, was going to be a top six forward, and now I see him as a first-line player who's still growing, who's still getting better by the day. And again, I think he's about to explode offensively if he keeps playing the way that he's been playing. So he's been a ton of fun to watch. For me, Nazem Kadri, when he's on, and I don't know if you guys see it the same way, he hasn't been on for a little while now. He can certainly be that same type of guy. But, yeah, entries have been something the Flames have struggled with, more so on the power play than at 5-on-5, I would say. But that's certainly one of Connor Zeri's many strengths. And he's an exciting young player who I think has really blossomed over the last couple of years. And it just goes to show you, sometimes you have to be patient with these kids. Probably spent more time in the American Hockey League than he wanted to. But he made the most of that time. He's come up, and I think it's safe to say, maybe Matt Coronato will be saying this a year from now, but I think it's safe to say Connor Zeri's not going back.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty safe. I think if if the Wranglers equipment staff is listening, they could probably take both of those jerseys and just throw them in the back storage room. I don't think either of those guys are going to see
the
AHL anytime
soon.
They're nice
jerseys.
I said storage room.
I'm glad you said storage room, not in the trash.
No, I had to auction them off for charity. Come on.
They're nice jerseys, so you got to do something productive with
them. Whether the most exciting offensive player on the team is Kadri or Kuzmenko or Zeri, I think part of what has made this a fun group to watch more nights than not this year is that you can have a debate now about who it is. And I'm not sure at this point last season we were debating who the most exciting offensive player on the team was. Like, I think this is a more dangerous team because of some of the emergence and additions that they've had, and that's made them fun to watch.
And different guys do it differently, right? I mean, Jonathan Huberdeau is very cerebral in the way that he plays, but he makes passes that nobody else on the team and very few players in the league can make. So he can be really exciting in that regard. Yegor Sharangovich, for me, has a shot that is probably as fun to watch as anybody else on the team, just because of how he releases the puck. It's such a unique release. So to your point, Wes, yeah, there are a bunch of guys who I think you could make strong arguments for, but with the way he's played of late, Connor Zeri should probably be right at the top.
And that will do it for our Daily Flames Roundtable. We'll do it again, different cast of characters, but we'll do it again on Wednesday. Thank you, Wilsey.
Okay, guys, enjoy the game tonight.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. Wes Gilbertson is on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Connor Gronsdahl and Cam Hughes are producers this hour on Flames Talk as well. Smack dab in the sports drive, which is brought to you, as always, by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.